أبعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون. صدق الله العظيم. My dear respected elders and brothers, last week we had initiated and started a topic with regard to the recent earthquake in Turkey. But as a brief background to what is happening there, we had made mention with regard to the history of the region, how that particular region came under Islamic and Muslim influence, and after coming under Islamic and Muslim influence, how the people responsible for that particular region coming under Islamic influence, how they shouldered the responsibility and burden of Islamic leadership or Muslim leadership for over 400 years. We then made mention that after the decline of the Khilafat, and the decline of the Khilafat was one of the great tragedies to strike the Muslim Ummah and the Muslim world. We did not have the time to go into the reasons last week, but today inshallah very briefly we would like to look at the reasons why the fall of the Khilafat was such a great tragedy for Muslims and for the Ummah at large. You see, while the Turkish or the Ottoman Khilafat had very many weaknesses, one of its strengths was that it binded people on the basis not on national identity, but on the basis of being part of the Muslim Ummah. But with the decline and fall of the Uthmani Khilafat, a new ideology, aided and abetted by the enemies of Islam, gripped the Muslim world. This particular devastating ideology was the concept of the nation state. And these particular nation states were carved out by former colonial powers who obviously did not have the interests of Islam or Muslims at heart. They carved out the Islamic or the Khilafat into nation states, small states. And there were no rhyme and reason how they did it. Like pieces of, like a block of cheese, they cut it out. This belongs to you or this is this particular state. Now according to this devastating ideology, each and every nation state belonged, or this each and every nation state or every group or nation belonged to a state. Now these particular nation states, they formed one particular identity and one particular interest. They had their own national flag, their own national days, their own national army to protect, not the Muslim Ummah at large, but protect its own national boundaries and its own national interests. This is what it had become. The leaders of those particular states, when they were not paying allegiance to their foreign masters, were supposed to look after the interests of their own nation states. Now this had the effect of the Ummah dying. In the halls of power, there was no one to take the name of the Ummah, because the Ummah did not exist in the halls of power. In the United Nations, there is not one particular group which represents the Muslim Ummah. Syria is there to defend the interests of the Syrian people. Egypt is there to defend the interests of the Egyptian people. There is no one in the halls of power today to take responsibility for the Muslim Ummah at large. This is the situation with regard to this devastating ideology which has been mapped out by the enemies of Islam when they made this whole particular nation state. Therefore we find that the dishonoring of women in Kashmir, or the arson and the looting and the persecution of the Muslims in Kashmir, is no more an issue for the Ummah. It is only an issue belonging to Pakistan, and that too because of strategic reasons. The persecution of the Palestinians is no more a Muslim Ummah problem. It is only the problem of the Palestinian people. And even place things like Jerusalem and Masjid al-Aqsa has become a Palestinian problem. Bosnia and Kosovo was no one's problem. Therefore, not one Muslim country even raised a shot in anger with regard to the persecution of the Muslims in what is happening in Bosnia and Kosovo, because according to this particular devastating ideology, Bosnia and Kosovo did not exist as a national state, and because they did not exist as a nation state, there was no one to take responsibility for the persecution that was happening there. This is with regard to the devastating ideology which has gripped the Muslim Ummah. Oh, for that particular time. And although they might, rulers have had made other weaknesses, but they still realized that they belong to one Muslim Ummah. In the time of Mu'tasim Billah, Mu'tasim Billah was not regarded as a very pious Muslim ruler in the annals of Muslim history. But yet when it came to his ears that a woman in faraway Roman Empire was abducted, and when she was abducted, she said, "Wa Mu'tasimah, O Mu'tasim, if only you could be of assistance to me. You are the Muslim Ummah, ruler of the Muslim Ummah. You can't come to my assistance." He did not after that rest. And he said, "I would not rest until I listen or I come to the answer, the pleas and the cries of that particular Muslim woman who was abducted." This is with regard to this. And this was particularly done by former colonial powers to keep their power and their sway of influence over those areas which they still had some control over. But amongst the general Muslim Ummah, amongst the general masses of the Muslims, you and I, we who still have Islam at heart, we know that this particular ideology is foreign to the Islamic concept of Muslim brotherhood. Because we know that the Quran says, "Inna hadihi ummatukum ummata wahida." This particular Ummah is one Ummah. It is one people. It is not differentiated on the basis of race, color, nation, tribe. It is one Ummah. Innamal mu'minuna ikhwah. Verily, all Muslims are but one single Muslim brotherhood. And Muslims throughout the world, wherever they live, have been torn today between these two aspects, between loyalty to the state and loyalty to the Muslim Ummah. Muslims in India are constantly being reminded and asked, "Where is your loyalty? Is your loyalty to the Ummah or is your loyalty to the nation of India?" And there is no other more greater manifestation of this dichotomy than in Hajj. Hajj is supposed to be the annual reminder that we as the Ummah is one Ummah. One particular brotherhood, all of them wearing the same dress, all of them making tawaf of the same one Kaaba, and standing on the plains of Arafat as one people, beseeching Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for forgiveness and for help. But on this is one hand, on the one hand. On the other hand, this is where the dichotomy comes in from, is that you cannot perform Hajj. In Hajj, you cannot go from one place to another without your most important document, your passport. And what does your passport reflect? Your passport reflects that you belong to a particular nation state. This is one of the consequences of the fall of the Khilafat, that what harm it has wrought and what harm it has brought to the Muslim Ummah at large. This particular ideology of the nation state has weakened the Muslim Ummah, as I've just made mention. One of the consequences of the fall of the Usmani Khilafat. Coming back to our subject, with regard to the history of Turkey, after the decline of the Usmani Khilafat, now without going into much details, a person comes into power by the name of Mustafa Kemal Atatürk. And after he comes into power, 3rd March 1924, the Khilafat is abolished. 3rd March 1924, the Khilafat is abolished. Mustafa Kemal Atatürk had an intense hatred for religion and Orthodox Islam to such an extent that one of the people who wrote the history of Turkey, in one of his books, I think his name is Berkesi, in Turkish nationalism and the Western civilization, writes that it was well known among the people at that particular time that once in a discussion with the Sheikhul of Islam of Turkey, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk took the Quran and flung it at this particular Sheikhul Islam. This was now in 1924, the abolition of the Khilafat. In April of 1928, the constitution of Turkey was changed. Whereas previously it was that the religion of the Turkish nation will be Islam, this was removed from the constitution in April 1928. Now what a far cry from what was with regard to this particular region and what had happened. From where Sultan Muhammad Fatih was, who I spoke with regard to his greatness in last week's talk, and where did we come? In April 1928, this particular phrase that the religion of Turkey would be Islam was abolished. Allah Ta'ala says in the Quran, وَتِلْكَ الْأَيَّامُ نُدَاوِلُهَا بَيْنَ النَّاسِ. These are the days that we change amongst people, the changes that Allah Ta'ala brings. And these changes, respected brothers, do not happen haphazardly. There is always a reason behind it for it. You see, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, from Islamic perspective, it is quite clear that our leaders are a reflection of our deeds. Leaders are the reflection of the deeds of the masses and general people. There is an Arabic saying, some of them have even quoted it as a hadith, أَعْمَالَكُمْ أُمَّالَكُمْ, that your amal and your deeds are your rulers. In Urdu, there is a very similar saying, جَسَ رُوح وَسَ فَرِشْتَ. How your ruh is going to be, that's the type of farishta who will come and take out your ruh and your soul. In the time of Ali radiallahu ta'anhu, one person came to complain and said, oh Ali, in the time of Abu Bakr and Umar, there was peace, there was serenity, there was no civil war, there was no conflict between Muslim and Muslim. But in your particular khilafat, we find that there is civil war, there is conflict between Muslim brothers. Why is this so? So Ali radiallahu ta'anhu gave such a beautiful reply and said, Abu Bakr and Umar had advisors such as us, like me. And I have advisors such as you. That is why the situation has come the way it is. That is how it has come. So our amal, our rulers are the reflection of our amal. Nevertheless, this was what the abolition of the Khilafat, after the abolition of the Khilafat, this particular phrase was removed from the Turkish constitution. Thereafter, the powers or the people who rule over Turkey, to try and gain acceptance and legitimacy and to gain entry into the European Union, they tried their utmost to outlaw all forms or outward expressions of Islam. So much so that all types of headgear for the Muslim male was declared illegal in the state, whether it be the fez, whether it be the topi, whether it be the turban. In fact, it was made compulsory for everyone to wear a European-style hat. And to show his point, Mustafa Kemal Ataturk sent one of his deputies to an Islamic conference in Makkah in 1928 with a European-style hat. And he was met, obviously, with reserve by the other Muslim delegates. Then Parda was declared illegal. Then furthermore, the Arabic script was replaced by the Latin script. For some time in Turkey after 1928, it was declared illegal to give azan in Arabic, to try and distance yourself from the past. And azan had to be given in the Turkish language. Now this particular state of affairs has remained state policy from the time of Ataturk right up to this day. The regimes which have come, afraid of facing the truth of Islam, they have chosen the option of declaring illegal anything which has an association with Islam. Anything which could be regarded as an outward expression of Islam has been declared illegal. Sometimes it has come to a situation where it is even downright silly. And downright, you know, silly and foolish. The way we read very recently in the newspapers, and what we saw, what we read was that a Muslim MP, Muslim woman MP, was thrown out of the parliament, was not allowed to take her seat in parliament, because she wanted to express an Islamic identity of wearing the scarf. Thereafter also, the religious schools were closed down. The religious schools, which are known as Imam Hatib, were closed down. In fact, it will come as a surprise to many people that some years back, in 1997, just 2 years back, there was a particular bill that was contemplated by the military to be established and go through the Turkish parliament. It was known as the bill, this was carried with some detail by the Impact magazine during the year of 1997. This particular bill was known as the Freedom of Religion Bill, and to protect the abuse of those particular freedoms. Part of that bill was 1 to 3 year imprisonment for anyone who outside a public or outside a place of worship in public life wears any clothing or any attire which is deemed to be Islamic. You will be put into jail for 1 to 3 years. So if it's regarded that the topi is an Islamic attire, or the burqa is an Islamic attire, if a person wears that in a public place, he will be liable to spend 1 to 3 years imprisonment. 8 years imprisonment for anyone who teaches anti-secular religious views and ideals. 5 years imprisonment for any person who asks the next person, what is your religion? You will be liable to go 5 years imprisonment to ask another person, what is your religion? Although this particular bill did not come to the Turkish parliament, because the politicians did not listen to the military who wanted to push this bill down the Turkish assembly. But this is nothing new. This is just a follow-up on another law which is known as the Article 163 in the Turkish code, which has similar draconian laws to see to it that there is no public manifestation or public expression of any form of Islam in Turkey, in a place where 99% of the people are Muslims. Now this is with regard to some of the history of Turkey and where we come up to now. However, what they fail to understand is this. Firstly, that, you know, noble people, noble individuals, and noble groups, like the Rifa Party, was declared illegal and thrown out of power simply because the Rifa Party was declared illegal and unlawful simply because it has relative sympathy to Islam and Islamic ideals. One of the mayors of a particular town was thrown out of his post because he went against the constitution according to the Turkish court by one day making mention with regard to Al-Quds and Masjid Al-Aqsa. That Masjid Al-Aqsa has been wrongly invaded and wrongly taken into control by the Zionists and by the Israeli army or the Israeli government. For this he was removed from his post of being a mayor of a particular city and a particular town. Now what they don't fail to understand is that these type of people, noble groups and individuals, are not something new to Islam. Even if you remove a particular group or individual from the scene, Islam will continue creating, and Islam will continue bringing hundreds of such people who will continue to rise. So if you remove one party from the scene, or you remove one individual from the scene, you would not be able to cure, in their eyes, what is known as Islamophobia. Because Allah Ta'ala says, هُوَ الَّذِي أَرْسَلَ رَسُولَهُ بِالْهُدَى وَدِينِ الْحَقِّ لِيُظْهِرَهُ عَلَى الدِّينِ كُلِّ. Allah has sent His Rasul, and He has come with a true religion, that it must dominate over other religions. For that to happen, we'll have to make a lot of striving and effort to try and bring about that particular position which Allah Ta'ala speaks about in the Holy Quran. وَلَوْ كَرِهَ الْمُشْرِكُونَ. Even if the non-believers and the disbelievers detest or dislike it. A second important thing that you must understand is, Islam is divine truth. It does not need the permission, or it does not need the legality of any president, any parliament, for it to exist. It exists in its own right as divine truth. It does not need anyone's permission, help, or patronage for it to exist. Because this is Islam, it comes from Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In fact, Allah ta'ala says, يَا أَيُّوَ الَّذِينَ عَامَنُوا مَنْ يَرْتَدَّ مِنْكُمْ عَنْ دِينِي. Oh believers, if you turn away from religion, never mind, turn away. فَسَوْفَ يَأْتِ اللَّهُ بِقَوْمٍ. Allah will bring another nation. يُحِبُّهُمْ وَيُحِبُّونَ. They will love Allah. Allah will love them. You will be the losers. Allah will not lose. The deen of Allah will not lose. Islam does not need anyone's protection or patronage for it to exist. It exists because of it being a divine truth. Nevertheless, this is just some aspects with regard to the history of Turkey. I'm not in any way suggesting, as I would inshallah make mention of in the next bayan, with regard to what had happened there, with regard to the earthquake, is in any way a punishment. No, I'm not even suggesting that. I'm just briefly, in today the two talks, making mention with regard to the history of the Turkish region. Inshallah, our next bayan, which may be, maybe not next week being a public holiday, the following Friday, inshallah, if Allah Ta'ala keep us alive, we would look at this particular phenomena. Why do the earthquakes come? And what are the reasons for it coming? It is not coincident that it comes. Inshallah, we will look at it in our next bayan.